From the Sky News Centre at 6. David Cameron says he thinks about the consequences of the EU referendum every single day. He called it for 2016 when he was Prime Minister. He's told the Times newspaper he didn't take the decision lightly. Philip Blond used to be one of his advisers.
I think he genuinely felt this is something that the country needs to address. And I think that's quite a persuasive argument. In part, he caused the conditions that led to voters voting for Brexit.
Meanwhile, the current Prime Minister's been heckled during a speech in Rotherham and told to get back to Westminster. Boris Johnson was talking to a convention on devolving power to regions in the north of England. The inquests into the deaths of 22 people killed in the Manchester Arena bombings may instead become a public inquiry. A coroner's ruled that disclosing some evidence in the open would assist terrorists in carrying out similar atrocities, so this way some of what's heard could be disclosed in private. The family of a teenager who died after eating chicken at a Byron Burger says restaurants need to take more responsibility over labelling. Owen Carey, who said he was allergic to dairy, suffered a reaction because it was coated in buttermilk. In sport, England's cricketers are looking to end day two of the final Ashes test with a healthy lead over Australia. Live to Guy Swindles at the Oval.
And it currently stands at 69 because the Australians are 225 for 9 in their first innings. 5 wickets for the mightily impressive Jofra Archer. He's just taken the 5th bowling lion for 25. And the next ball thought he'd actually finished the innings, but Hazelwood was dropped by Joe Root. Second catch, he is put down in the innings.
And LGBT charity Stonewall says it's delighted Sam Smith feels able to speak openly about gender identity. Fans are being asked to refer to the singer as they or them after the star came out as non-binary earlier this year. That's the latest. I'm Tanya Snuggs.
BCFM.
This is Bristol. It's Friday, 6 o'clock. Welcome to BCFM's Politics Show. Tony Gosling helping me review this week's news. Is Brexit Party prospective parliamentary candidate for Stroud, Desi Latimer. Irish Republican Labour activist Martin Summers is here too. After the 7 o'clock news, the poor Rohingyas. Why do Muslims always get it in the neck, just like the Jews in the 1930s, eh? Funny that. We look at who's been selling arms to Aung San Suu Kyi's brutal Burmese government. But more to the point, who, bearing gifts of guns, encouraged the Rohingyas to think they could successfully rise up in the first place? Attempt to assassinate Soviet leader Stalin. What does it tell us about who was really in charge in Nazi Germany? Martin Bormann in England, filling the gap between his being released from Berlin in Op JB to popping up in Paraguay and Argentina in 1956. Where was he in between? Listeners have called for more on Bormann. You get more tonight. And our second super brain this week, British-born Professor Anthony Sutton at the Hoover Institute, Stanford University, and his explanation of how one secret faction can control both sides of politics. And what happens if you're ordered to carry out an assassination and paid very nicely for it? There's always the possibility, and we hear from one man who survived at least 2 attempts on his life after he assassinated a senior US politician. Dead men tell no tales. That goes for the assassin as well as the one assassinated. Also, we take a look at 1946, the year the Zionist terrorist groups opened up on British-mandated Palestine. That's all in the second hour after the US-owned Comcast news at 7. On to our news review in a minute, but first Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Tonight, lows of 9 and dry. Warming up over the weekend around 21 degrees Celsius, mainly sunny over the weekend. Next week, though, highs around 20 Celsius, mainly sunny with a few fleeting showers next week. Next weekend, though, 21st and 22nd of September, highs of 22, mainly sunny. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. So joining me to review this week's news is Brexit Party prospective parliamentary candidate for Stroud, Desi Latimer. Hi, Desi. Welcome to the Politics Show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, notable by their absence on this show in the run-up to Brexit, in fact, most of this year, I'm afraid this year, have been all but one of Bristol's senior politicians, not one of Bristol's six MPs, four Labour and two Tory, as well as two of our three mayors. That's the Labour Mayor Marvin Rees and the Tory Metro Mayor Tim Bowles. They've either refused or simply repeatedly failed to reply to requests. Only our Lord Mayor, Lib Dem Jos Clark, who chairs Bristol's four council meetings, put in an appearance. Despite refusals, I've kept asking every week, and after 2 months of requests and now clear rejections from Labour's Bristol East MP, Kerry McCarthy, West MP, Thangam Debonair, and South MP, Karen Smith. Former Universities Minister and Tory Kingswood MP, Chris Skidmore, has also refused. This leaves Labour MP Darren Jones from North West, as well as Filton and Bradley Stoke Tory MP Jack Napresti, as the only two MPs who have so far failed to decide or reply. Clearly, not one of the six of our top politicians, or in fact eight, including the two mayors, want to answer questions here. Let's hope our Lord Mayor Jos Clark is not Bristol's only so-called top politician to pluck up courage to answer questions before the dead banksters rise to make another packet at our expense, or Brexit is postponed again 2 months' time on Halloween. So, Desi, just tell us a little bit about yourself. You're standing when the general election happens in Stroud. What's your background?
I've lived in Stroud for 12 years. My area of expertise is actually on renewable energy. I am from the Philippines originally. I'm married to an Englishman, and the UK has been my home for 30 years. So I am just a complete beginner. And I was not heavily involved during the Leave campaign. And the reason why I'm standing for the Brexit Party in the Stroud constituency was really I'm so disappointed and frustrated that we're not going to leave the European Union as scheduled on the 29th of March.
Hang on, because why do you care? I mean, you didn't get involved in the Leave campaign, you say, in the first place. So surely, you know, you haven't actually got an iron in the fire here.
That's I think the reason why I really care about this is it's not whether the result would have been leave or remain, but it's really respecting the result of the referendum. I would have respected the result of the referendum if it had been remain. But the fact that we have 52% gave a democratic verdict to leave the European Union, and it looks like it's not going to happen, or the parliament is trying to obstruct that. That is a big deal. And that really made me move from being a bystander to a active participant in this political expression.
Okay, so it sounds to me like you've got behind the Leave campaign, but you don't actually necessarily really believe in it. What you believe in is democracy. So why, you know, what do you actually believe here? Because, you know, you can say, oh, well, I just wanted to go along with the verdict, and you've just sort of stumbled into being Leave, or do you actually really believe it?
I do believe it, but I would have gone with what the country have voted for. I tried to campaign just around my friends and my family that we are better off outside the European Union. Bear in mind, I came from the Philippines, and we fight for freedom. You know, you don't normally get offered to be for self-rule. You normally fight for that. So for me, it's important to have this self-rule, and that's why I wanted us to leave the European Union.
What about the Philippines? Do you still go back there from time to time to see your relatives?
Not relatives. I go back because that's my region of expertise. I tried to promote UK technology companies, including European companies, in the area of renewable energy. So I go back and work with UKTI, which is the UK Trade and Investment, a UK government company, and the British embassies, and to ensure that we promote UK companies in that region.
What's the Philippines like? Is it hot?
It is. It is always hot. It's 15 degrees above, north of the equator, 15 degrees. So it is always hot. And it's, yes.
What about Martin? Maybe we should bring you in. We've got a bit of international stuff going on in the first hour for a change. The CIA for many years have been trying to take control of the Philippines, haven't they? The Americans, basically. It's a strategic target for them, and we've had, over the last few years, Duterte taking over.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've never been to the Philippines. I used to work for the Catholic Fund for Overseas Development, and so they had... they had quite a lot of projects out there. Yeah. I was working on for the East European section. And I've obviously read about it. Well, it's a place where, one of the third world countries that's most important in the struggle for justice, isn't it? And the current regime they're not liked in the West. Duterte is not liked in the West because he's regarded as a strong man and all the rest of it. But he's a bit independent. He's not accepted American. Pressure to fight with the Chinese, for example. He's kind of weaving and ducking between the two sides, and of course there's still an awful lot of poverty and misery.
Isn't he a former gangster?
He's a strong man, but the idea that he's a gangster is just a sort of political rhetoric.
I was expecting you to say there that all leaders are gangsters, but anyway, sorry. Yes, Desi.
I just say that I do not approve on his program of extrajudicial killing, and that's very, very important to note.
Yeah,
that is not acceptable.
I would say that his politics are. Not aligned necessarily with the Americans, but they're not necessarily aligned with justice and freedom either. So there's always been a big problem with oligarchic rule in the Philippines, just like in Colombia, which I know a lot better because I go to.
And the Americans over the years, several times, haven't they, have put the pressure on the Philippines, sending jets from their aircraft carriers zooming over that sort of thing, and saying, "Look, you're going to do as you're told, Philippines. Otherwise, these jets are going to start dropping." Bombs on you.
Well, it is strategically important in terms of where it is for the military. So you would expect various forces. So you've got Americans and China also trying to make sure that the Philippines would be on their side. And I think Duterte, he can spot the opportunity, and he's trying to play this two big powers together.
Yeah. And of course, the US was, after the Marcos was kicked out, the US military bases were removed from the Philippines. But of course, they managed to come back in because they've basically been supporting some of the more extreme Muslim separatist groups. And then say, you need military help from us to deal with these Muslim separatist groups who are part of, the West's global hybrid war strategy.
But historically, the Philippines is slightly aligned with the United States because it was a colony in a way in 1898, and we were a colony until after the Second World War. So it has that inclination, and most Filipinos would study in America. I studied in America.
So extrajudicial killings, that doesn't sound very democratic. Luckily, of course, we are in the home of the Mother of Parliaments. Let's go to listen to the proroguing of Parliament earlier this week.
This is not, however, a normal prorogation. It is not difficult. It is not standard. It's one of the longest for decades. And it represents, not just in the minds of many colleagues, but huge numbers of people outside, an act of executive fiat. Mr. Stewart, if you don't like it, you're perfectly entitled to your view. I couldn't give a flying flamingo what your view is. Thank you very much indeed.
This is directed at the Tories as they're leaving. Labour trying to remember the red flag.
The Lord of God, he will keep the red flag flying here.
Well, I mean, most people will have been aware of what's happening.
Can you remember all the words to the red flag?
I can't remember all the words, but I can sing it in tune, unlike that. If you want, do you want me to try? I've got a better voice than they've got, I'll tell you. The Welsh MPs did a version of Bread of Heaven, which was actually in multiple parts, which was much more, much better rehearsed.
Well, they have a lot of practice singing in the hills, don't they, in Wales? But anyway, a more serious point, the Speaker Burko talking about executive fiat, what does he mean?
Well, I mean, the Parliament historically, in various stages, has stood up to the executive. That is to say, the government, the mainstream. The government is supposedly held to account in Parliament, and so they all mobbed Burko, the Speaker, when the Black Rod came in to say we're proroguing Parliament, because that's what happened in 1629 when they tried to prorogue Parliament, and they held the Speaker in his chair, so that the Parliament refused to be prorogued. And, of course, this whole question of proroguing Parliament and Parliament refusing to be prorogued was the proximate cause of the Civil War.
But the thing is that the Parliament's got their way. They've got their bill through, haven't they?
That's because they've got the majority in Parliament. See,
Boris Johnson has no longer got a government. What I'm saying is it's a bit largely theatrics, this.
Well, it's theatrics.
I mean, they've got what they want in Parliament.
Well, they haven't entirely got what they wanted, because Johnson's going back to the courts to say that he's not going to obey them. And all, you know, we could talk about what's going to happen in terms of what the way it's going to play out. I will just make this point that what we're seeing here is the British Constitution being tested to the limit, and everybody being made aware of what the different bits of it are and how it all fits together. And it's a pretty ramshackle piece of kit.
What we're seeing here, if you are the public, you're seeing trust has completely broken down between the parliament and the government. So now they're working against each other. And it's not look good. It doesn't look good because we're all fed up. In my constituency, there's really palpable anger that they're just playing the system. And we have to move forward. I have no idea how we can move on from there, but your ordinary punter would view it that way.
Boris Johnson is still saying, yes, I'm going to leave on the 29th.
Not on the 29th, the 31st.
31st, sorry.
Yeah, but it's not clear whether he can disobey. Don't forget, he's got no majority anymore. He's got minus 41 as a majority. So he's not really the government. So all this stuff about he's going to do a Queen's speech. You can't do a Queen's speech with a majority of minus 41. So in other words, this is all coming to a head. The question is, under the Fixed Term Parliament Act, when's the election going to be? And unfortunately for him, it isn't decided by him. It used to be, but not anymore, because the Tories changed the rules. And they can make him go to Brussels and ask for an extension, or they can force him to resign, or he could disobey the law and end up in prison.
Because Labour want to do their own deal with the EU. Yep. Is that realistic?
Yes. It is realistic, because what the idea is, as far as I can see, and of course, you know, there's lots of different views about this, as you know, is that we will try and do a deal which will be staying in the single market, probably in the customs union, like Norway.
But do you think the public want?
Well, no, hang on, Tony. Can I just lay this out to you? That will be accepted by the European Union, because that's what they've been saying all along. Why don't we do this? And then they'll put that on there will be a ballot set for that deal or to remain, because of course remaining probably gives you a bit more power than leaving, but still not being able to break out of the single market.
Isn't that a bit weird that you try and negotiate a deal and then you come back and you'll say, well, we're going to go for remain? So why bother negotiating a deal when you actually don't believe it?
Well, I think there are people in the Labour Party, and I might be one of them. I'm prepared to accept a soft Brexit of a Norway type. I'd probably vote remain. But nevertheless, don't forget, in the referendum campaign in 2016, what was being said by Nigel Farage and others was that those who said we're leaving the single market if we leave the European Union are scaremongering. We're not leaving the single market. Well, this idea that we are leaving the single market is new stuff.
Karen was talking about leaving under WHO.
Exactly, so anyway, and Sky,
let's have a listen now to Alan Brown. He's an economist here in Bristol. And this is what he had to say about Labour trying to do their own deal with the EU.
There's a problem in this position that the manifesto was to respect the referendum and Labour increased its vote. Now we've got this kind of fairly absurd position from Emily Thornberry that Labour would renegotiate a deal with the EU that they don't define what it is, that the EU say they won't give because they're saying essentially Theresa May's deal or nothing, and then Labour would then have a referendum which they would campaign against their own deal, which is a kind of absurd position.
The other thing, of course, is since the first referendum hasn't been honoured, has not been delivered, the instruction given by the people, why is a second referendum more likely to?
Well, I mean, the honourable way would be to have a Brexit and then campaign if people wanted to rejoin. That would be a reasonable approach.
Which target seats have Labour got?
Well, this is the other problem, is because the Remain vote, although it's going to 52, 48 or whatever, was unevenly distributed, and the Remain was concentrated in England, in London, and outside England, in Scotland and Northern Ireland, this means that the vast majority of Labour target seats voted Leave. So Labour can't win solely on Remain, especially as it's fighting many other Remain parties, like the SNP, like Plaid Cymru, like the Greens, like the Lib Dems. They can't possibly hope to put together a majority.
Well, I think, you know, there's all sorts of debates about how, because it is going to be very difficult to call under a first-past-the-post election, which is another reason why, as Berkoff said, we're probably going to need a written constitution out of all of this. That is the problem for Jeremy. Jeremy Corbyn's basically a soft Brexiter. That's always been his position. That's why. But there's no majority in this country for no-deal Brexit. It just isn't there. But, which is why, of course, when Theresa May went to the country, she lost power because it's propped up by the DUP, and that's why you've got an Irish backstop. They could easily have had a hard border in the Irish Sea, and then you could have had a no-deal Brexit. But once you've got the DUP propping up the government because they didn't win the election, Corbyn stormed from the back and blocked it, that's the last time
we
voted.
Do you think Labour is suffering because it doesn't have a clear plan?
Well, I think the problem is that the Labour Party's split. That chap there is clearly a leader.
So is the Conservative Party.
Well, indeed. But you can see what the problem is for a leader of the Conservative Party or the Labour Party. You've got a split party. Okay, you've got to keep them all together.
What the Conservatives have done is that they've had a ballot of their membership. Boris has been put in charge, and he's a leaver. Well, so that's the way to deal with this sort of thing.
We had a leaver that will represent the majority of the party.
What
you've got is Corbyn, with his soft Brexit position, has basically stymied the pro-Remain right wing of his own party. But of course, he's got to be all things to all people, which he finds quite tricky. And that makes he's in a difficult position, whatever he did.
He doesn't have to be. That's his chosen style.
I think that's quite wise. And what will happen?
I mean, you can't be, can you? You can't be all things to all people. It's impossible. Anyway, let's...
Can I just say what will happen? We will have a ballot... Ultimately, what the goal is we will have another referendum with a soft Brexit and a no Brexit on the ballot paper, and people will be able to campaign for whatever they want. It'll be a free vote. Yeah? Corbyn is not saying which one he's going to go for.
I don't think there's an easy sell. I mean, it would be a great risk for the Labour to try and push that one. I'm beginning to think that the real intention of the Parliament trying to stop Brexit is really eventually to revoke Article 50. And I think that might...
The Democrats have already said that's what they want.
Yes, but how about Labour? What do you think is their view on that
They're
one?
They're playing the middle ground, aren't they? They're sort of...
They're split.
They're going to go whichever way they feel like.
And that doesn't help us, normal person in the streets. We need to conclude this.
Anyway, some important things are happening in the Labour Party with a general election on the horizon, and that is something called trigger ballots. And this is where the Labour Party MPs may get deselected. Actually, that is quite a long process because the trigger ballot starts that process. If a trigger ballot is successful, that means that there will be competition with the existing MP and they'll have to fight their corner in order to stay there. And I spoke about this process, which is beginning right now, to the Secretary of Bristol North West Labour Party, Esther Giles, early this week.
We could see when we were campaigning that the manifesto was tremendously popular and we had lots of support and people felt quite positive. It's a bellwether seat.
What does that mean?
It means that if, and this is interesting because usually what it means is if there is going to be a Labour government, then the bellwether seat will be Labour. If there's going to be a Tory government, the bellwether seat will be Tory.
Okay.
But in this instance, the bellwether seat went Labour. We didn't quite get a Labour government.
But you had quite a good swing, didn't you?
A really good swing.
Anyway,
yeah.
We've got trigger ballots coming along soon.
Yeah.
There's not really been a lot of press about this, but it's quite important, isn't it, in the party?
Yeah, so the party is gradually moving towards an open selection process.
So why hasn't there been that in the past? How's it worked in the past?
Well, it's the pressure, I think, has built over a number of years that through conference, people wanting to have the opportunity to select their MP. The view that actually being an MP isn't a career.
Okay, so once someone becomes a Labour MP, they stay a Labour MP until they're either they decide that they've had enough or they get, I suppose, deselected at the ballot box.
Well, there is that, but at the moment there is a trigger process. So if people don't like their MP, they can trigger the MP being deselected. What we have at the moment is a halfway house. So there is a trigger process, but it's for everybody, every sitting MP.
But it doesn't sound very fair. If an MP has campaigned very hard, and particularly in a swing seat like yours, and managed to get in, then you say, oh, actually, we've decided we don't like you anymore. Doesn't sound fair.
No, it's not really about not liking the MP or not. It's about having an open selection so that the constituency can choose their representative and they may well choose their existing MP. And so they're not saying we don't want you. They're saying we want to go through a democratic process to choose our MP.
Okay,
and
so
it may be you.
So when is it happening?
It's happening over the next 8 weeks, over the next 2 months.
Okay, and so how does it involve ordinary Labour Party members?
So ordinary Labour Party members will be asked to go to branch meetings to vote to say whether or not they want to proceed to an open selection.
Okay, so is that a secret ballot or is it open?
It's a secret ballot, but the number of votes will be made public within the Labour Party.
And those brunch meetings sound like focus groups or something. Are the various MP candidates there, or do they get a chance to quiz the MP directly?
No, the MPs will not be there, but there will be a statement. There will be a statement from the MP, and there'll be a whips report, I think, as well.
So the whips will be saying, yes, this MP has done what the leader has told them to. Is that right?
I'm not sure. I haven't seen one of these reports before. It might be whether they turn up, and I don't know.
Okay,
so
what sort of majority do you need, and who are the various constituencies within the party that could trigger a open selection process?
So the two groups of relevant organisations, there are the branches within the constituency Labour Party. So I'm in Stoke Bishop and Seamills, for example. Save Mad Lawrence Western, there's Hendy's, Westbury on Trim, and so on. So there are seven branches within the constituency. Each of those branches have an opportunity to vote. And if more than one third of the branches vote for an open selection, there will be an open selection. So if there are seven branches, more than a third means three, because two would be less than a third. And at the same time, the affiliates to the CLP also get to vote. So the affiliates are people like trades unions. And the same rule applies. If more than a third or more of the affiliates vote for an open selection, irrespective of what the branch votes for, then there will be an open selection.
Well, it's an 8-week process, Martin. Do you think we'll have a general election before or after that?
Well, it's hard to know, isn't it? It could be that it'll be, if there's a snap election, then there won't be time to have re-selections, but otherwise they'll go ahead, won't they?
I mean, don't you think when there's a political crisis like this, actually what the public want to see, and we saw quite a list this on BBC's Question Time last night, a lot of people calling for saying, look, let's just have a general election because you guys aren't...
You're
having your own little crisis.
No, we
can sort it out for you.
The point about this is that the opposition parties do not want to have a general election before the 31st because they don't want Boris Johnson to force a no-deal Brexit before a general election, which is why they're not letting him have a general election until it's quite clear that he can't go down that road. And then we will have a general election about no-deal Brexit. and people who want to vote for no-deal Brexit parties can vote for them. But we're not going to be railroaded into it when we haven't got, he hasn't got a majority in Parliament or in the country for a no-deal Brexit. Look at the opinion polls. Majority do not want a no-deal Brexit. It's quite clear. And at a general election, that will come out.
Desi, do you want a no-deal Brexit?
Of course, I would like to go for a WTO rules Brexit, so a clean break Brexit. But let me just say, Martin, that people outside would actually view the Labour as running scared of general election because they don't have the numbers, as you said. They don't have the numbers, so it's not the best opportunity for them. But it's just really interesting that they dictate when the general election is.
Absolutely.
When the, I mean,
we've got the ball and we can do. I mean, don't forget the Tories have had all the power for ages and ages, and now they've got a majority of minus 41. And at that point, Parliament with the majority. Don't forget there was a general election in 2017, and that's what they elected this
morning. At the end of the day, I think, yeah. But the voters will decide who they think has got the most integrity
that's
at
right.
the top.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's have a listen now to Jeremy Corbyn's brother, because he has a few views on Brexit too, which I managed to squeeze out of him earlier this week. He's Piers Corbyn. He's a weather forecaster. But I also asked him about this winter. He reckons he can forecast long range what this winter's going to be like. Sorry to be talking about that in September, but winters are cold, folks. Sorry, and we're heading in that direction. How cold is it going to be, Piers?
Well, I'm Piers Corbyn. I'm a long range weather forecaster and astrophysicist. I forecast the weather months or years ahead using our understanding of solar activity, that is, particles from the sun and how they interact with the Earth's magnetic field and atmosphere.
Okay, what about this winter then?
Well, this winter, this late autumn, November and December are going to be, generally speaking, extremely cold and snowy in Britain and Ireland. January and February, we haven't completed the forecast yet for those yet, but there's more variability then, that is for sure. And if you want the details, they will all be available shortly, and the December is available now on weatheraction.com.
So from looking outward, let's just take a quick look in. What about Brexit? Is it going to happen or not?
Well, this after that is a political question rather than a scientific question. But I would say Brexit should, must and will happen. And the next question is when? Well, I don't know. It's a question of the ever postponement, isn't it? But maybe it will happen on the 31st of October. I hope so, and then we could get on with talking about the politics of the country and people's wealth distribution and so forth instead of these endless arguments.
Well, that's Piers Corbyn, the Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn's brother there, who's a weather forecaster, also spoken of by some as a climate change denier. He certainly is against the climate change. In fact, we had one of our dialect programmes 6 months or so ago with him arguing with Joe House from Bristol University about climate change in a program called Climate Change, Is It Really Man-Made? Which was fascinating for me to compare this bout between the two of them. But the proof of the pudding's in the eating, Martin, isn't it? He's there talking about extreme cold and snowy winter. He's very certain about it. He also seems fairly certain about Brexit.
Well, he seemed much less certain about Brexit than the weather forecast, to be honest, didn't he?
He was
fairly certain about the weather forecast.
Yes, he was. What? Yeah, but it must happen, he says.
Well, he said it must and should, but that's his view. In actual fact, the majority in the country, and of course, this you were talking...
You're saying the majority don't want it?
I think there's no majority in this country for no-deal Brexit. There just isn't.
What about for Brexit?
Well, the soft Brexit, like Norway-style Brexit, you might be able to pull that off. But... No deal Brexit, no way.
Desi, how do you cope with the party? Because Brexit seems to be your only policy. Do you have other policies? Do you think about other things if you get become an MP when the next general election comes along? You can't just be a Brexit MP.
I understand. The Brexit party is taking a bottom-up approach in terms of policy development. And in fact, if you're one of the supporters, you have got an email to say, please tell us what matters to you, what issues matters to you. And we have about 4,000 emails of policy suggestion, policy ideas, and in addition to that, we have regional conferences around the country where our supporters can book one-to-one with...
We're coming into the party conference season now. Are you going to be having a party conference?
Instead of just one, we're going to have various regional conferences. The nearest one to us is on the 22nd of September in Exeter. So, and
so nothing in Bristol...
That's the nearest, I'm afraid.
But I mean, so the cynical will say, and I will say, well, aren't you just trying to divide and rule in the Brexit Party? I mean, the Labour Party, the traditional parties, they get all the membership together, all those that want to come, and actually they can, at those conferences, the Labour Party probably more than the Conservatives do, actually make policy, vote and decide what the policy would be. But the Brexit Party's not doing that.
We are laying down the foundation. Bear in mind, we've only just started, so we really need ideas from our supporters to ensure that we reflect what matters to them. And we are at that stage. And, I mean, give us time. I mean, we're only less than a year old, and we are compiling all the issues that we've been receiving, and we will come up with policies in addition to the ones we've already announced.
Okay, let's look at some local stories now. And Bristol Mayor Marvin Rees is set for a £9,000 pay rise after a major review. Bristol City Council's 9 cabinet members, though, will not see a rise in their special responsibility allowance. And some see this as a way of the mayor dishing out these extra pay rises to his councillors who are pliable and compliant, not necessarily just the ones that he thinks will be best to do the job, but sometimes ones that will be more obedient, which is the way it works, I'm afraid, in the mayor system. But it does seem a bit unfair, Martin, doesn't it, to have the mayor awarding himself an extra £9,000 and nothing for anybody else.
I've heard of this. I mean, who decided it? Was it decided by him, or was it decided by other...
It's effectively decided by him. He makes these decisions, doesn't he?
Well, I mean, he'll have to defend that himself. I didn't even know that was the case, so I've got nothing to say about that.
What do you make of that sort of the mayor system, Desi? What do you think? Because we're now in a situation where you have almost a kind of chief executive in charge of the city rather than a committee, a cabinet, which have a leader from one party normally.
So the mayor exercises an executive function.
Yeah, they're very powerful with the selected role. Yeah, because it's a new system,
it's
really.
It's not like the mayor of Stroud, no.
No, that's the same. So is there quite a good check and balance?
Well, we would argue on this show possibly not.
Okay. None at all. He does what he wants, effectively. Yeah. But anyway, £9,000 for him and nothing for the other members of the cabinet. So anyway, it does sound a little bit as if... extra £9,000 could go on other things. But also this week, the years have been wasted, apparently. Actually, this is not, I don't think, this week's story, but it's from a few weeks ago. And this is about the government turning down something called the South West, it's known as the South Bristol Wrong Road Campaign, has welcomed the news that the South West Regional Spatial Strategy has been turned down. Now, Martin, we've been talking about the plans for Western Harbour for several weeks here. We were one of the first programmes to really kick it out there 2 months ago. With Joanna Booth, who was a campaigner from Western Harbour, and saying, well, we're getting no information about this. We now hear that the government has actually said that they're not acceptable, the Regional Spatial Strategy, which is Bristol City Council's planning document for the future. It's not acceptable. They've got to go back to the drawing board.
Well, it's interesting because, of course, we had George Ferguson on this programme a couple of weeks ago, who used to be the mayor, and that's exactly what he said. He said the central government won't allow them to do this. And so they've misjudged it completely. I don't know enough to argue about it. I'm not a member of the cabinet or of the council.
Anyway, this is about a month old, this story, but we didn't pick it up at the time. The councils who developed plans for 150,000 new homes in our region have come under fire, and the government has rejected the proposals. A letter from the government inspector poses questions about the way in which strategic development locations, which describe where large-scale developments should be built, were chosen for the West of England Joint Spatial Plan. It's called the JSP for short. They said, we think it's only fair to advise you, we currently consider that withdrawal of the joint spatial plan from examination may well be the most appropriate way forward. What they're saying here, they want new garden villages in South Gloucestershire and North Somerset. That was one of the aspects of the schemes to be questioned, but authorities must still meet that 105,000 homes target. Now, it sounds to me, and of course this isn't really your area, South Gloucestershire, Desi, so I'll ask you again, Martin, that what's happened is the developers have sat down with the mayor and they've said this is what we want to do, and the planning inspectors have said no.
Well, I'm not well informed enough to go into the fine detail of this, but I think it is significant, as I say, that George Ferguson said this last week, not last week, the week before, that this spatial, you know, that what they're trying to do, the government will step in and prevent them doing it. And they, you know, that sounds like they ought to have thought of that before they set off.
Hengrove and Whitchurch Park Councillor Tim Kent, who's a regular regularly appears on this programme, said, "We, the Lib Dems, gave grave warnings. Over 2 years, the plan was deficient, the decision-making opaque and undemocratic, and the conclusions were wrong. We particularly highlighted some of the greenbelt developments being proposed, such as at Whitchurch, were plain wrong and unsupportable in planning terms. Having attended and spoke at some of the hearings, it was clear the councils had no sound or evidence reasons for their choices and decisions and little answer to the justified criticism of the plan." Well, this isn't just the local opposition. This is the planning inspectors making these decisions, Martin, who are outside the system. One of the things that unscrupulous developers often do, if they can twist the arm of pliable politicians, is they say, "We want the new development on this nice, cheap agricultural land, which costs us peanuts to buy," and they won't build developments on brownfield sites, for example.
Well, as you well know, the basic system in this country is far too permissive to developers, and the rules are that unless there is a reason not to develop something, they're allowed to do it. And if councils try and block them, they can appeal. Councils can't appeal, but developers can appeal. And they just, and of course, they land bank and carry on hanging on to stuff. You know, as you know, various sites in Bristol have been derelict for years, and the developers won't do anything with them until they can do exactly what they
want. Fast forward to this week: standing room only as residents demand more information on the Western Harbour plans. 200 people were at the meeting in Hotwells. This is Amanda Cameron, local Democracy reporter, and Kate Wilson, political editor, reporting for the Bristol Post. A standing room only, as nearly 200 people gathered at Hotwells Church on September the 12th in the evening to discuss the controversial plans for the Western Harbour. Interesting, isn't it? I mean, I'll put a link up to this on our show page at thisweek.org.uk, the headline being "Standing Room Only at Western Harbour Plans." But this whole situation seems to be being a bit developed here. Because this plan for the Western Harbour could be incredibly disruptive, and several of the main options have been not given to the public. I don't quite understand why the council, why the mayor is trying to push this through, when it's obvious that there's an enormous pushback, not only from the local people who live there, but also from the opposition parties, and quite possibly from within his own party too, for councillors that are standing in these areas.
Well, I think it's got another interesting twist on this, is that Marvin Rees actually attends Hotwells Church that you described. That's his church. So there you are. I think the problem is that the developers have always run Bristol, and that, you know, people think the council decides things. The council basically has no real power. I used to work for the council, and I was peripherally involved in planning decisions around what went on in Temple Meads, because I was a social economy development officer. And basically, the developers have all the cards, and the local authorities are basically under the cosh as far as
onto a national story now. And a new scientist kicked off a headline in the Daily Mail this week. Not Brexit for a change. Addiction to prescription drugs is the UK's public health disaster, and that was Claire Wilson writing in the New Scientist this week. Could be as big a problem in the UK as addiction to illegal drugs like heroin, so say a group of UK doctors and politicians who've called for urgent action to help people who get hooked on painkillers, antidepressant and anti-anxiety medicines like Valium. We're in the midst of a great public health disaster which is killing hundreds of people a year and ruining the lives of millions, Harry Shapiro, the head of addiction charity Drugwise, said at a meeting of the all-party parliamentary group for prescribed drug dependence last week. So Desi, what do you make of this? People addicted to prescription drugs, not illegal drugs.
Yes, this is really a sad development, and I wonder what should be the right intervention, whether it's medical or not. I think it reflects a wider societal problems in terms of addiction, because obviously they didn't need to be addicted to these drugs. And if we could figure out where the trigger points are and address that before it's triggered, I think that's the best solution rather than medical intervention.
I mean, okay, so people are going to their doctors with anxiety of various sorts. The doctor's saying, here, take this pill.
And then they find
they can't stop taking them.
Well, I think in the US it's pretty clear what's been going on. They've been the drug companies have been pushing what are basically heroin-based painkillers. So loads of people go and get, and of course, don't forget they've got no proper healthcare system over there, which may happen here if the NHS is broken up, and they just hand out heroin-based pills like Smarties. You know, if you go to the doctor or you go to the chemist to get this stuff, and of course it's addictive. Then people start using street heroin, and then they die. So they've got there's always been a large number of people dying from drug addiction in the US, more than in Britain, although Britain's got a very high in relation to other European countries. And they've just been convicted in the US courts of pushing this stuff. And of course, the criminal markets and the state controlled market interact with each other. And of course, as we all know, if you know the history, the CIA have been involved in drug smuggling since the Chinese Civil War.
Not antidepressants, are they?
No, but I mean, the drug companies want to sell. They're interested in selling drugs because that's what they do. Yeah, I mean, that's what the drug companies do. They sell drugs.
So you're saying,
and of course, in places
that,
like the Philippines, they've been pushing for allowing to develop their own generic drugs. Yeah, which we can build themselves to break the power of the pharmaceutical company.
I don't think you're actually on the point here, because the point here being that people are becoming addicted to these prescription drugs, and the pharmaceutical industry is making a lot of money out of prescription drugs, and there doesn't seem to be anything like the same sort of program to help people off those as there are for heroin.
Well,
there isn't much
of a program to help people off the other stuff. We've got
There's
a huge problem anyway, but underlying all of this, don't forget the banking system was rescued by the drug cartels in 2008. There's a UN report on drugs and crime came out in 2009, mostly written by police officers, and they said, well, what happened there is the drug cartels bailed out the banks.
They're
integrated into the system. And there's a huge amount of money involved.
One of the reasons,
and of course, it's all linked with intelligence agencies like the CIA, who were bringing cocaine from Colombia into the United States in the 1980s.
This isn't really
linked with fentanyl, which is what's causing all the problem in the US.
It's not.
It's a heroin based.
We're talking about antidepressants in here in the UK, not the CIA or fentanyl. Anyway, one of the reasons people might well be going to their doctors because they're depressed is because they haven't got any money to buy food. Rhyl in North Wales has now got more food banks than supermarkets as families are pushed further into poverty. A fourth food bank has been launched because of the increasing demand in the town. All the time, of course, the government are telling us, Desi, that there are more people being employed than ever and that the unemployment figures are the lowest in history. Well, I mean, it doesn't sound like that, because people here are having to go to food banks, particularly here in this particular place in North Wales, having more food banks than supermarkets.
We have a huge inequality. You've just highlighted that, actually. We need to be able to move on from Brexit, and I'm really glad that we're starting to talk about this, but this is the type of conversation we should be dealing with, because while we're obsessed with Brexit, we have people addicted to antidepressant, we have people on food banks. This is the type of conversation we should be concentrating on.
Martin, food banks, why have we still got them, and why particularly North Wales?
Well, I mean, North Wales is a part of peripheral Britain, and, you know, the way that the economy's been run since 1979 has drained resources out of peripheral Britain. So, you know, you've actually got that part of North Wales is actually the heartland of Plaid Cymru. They don't want to be part of the United Kingdom, yeah? And that they tend to be pro-Brexit, yeah, like the SNP and Sinn Féin, yeah, and as all of these things, you know, politics. I think we should. This is one of the things that Corbyn did at the last election. They thought the election was going to be about Brexit, and it turned out that he was able to mobilise people about completely different things. And he said, "I don't even want to talk about Brexit. I want to talk about this other stuff," and it was actually quite a successful strategy. But of course, we can't avoid Brexit because I'm afraid that's the, what politics is about. It's like in Northern Ireland. I'm afraid it's there's lots of poverty in Northern Ireland, but the politics is about nationalism on both sides. It just is.
Well, I'm afraid we are going to go back to talk about Brexit. Sorry, Desi, a little bit more, because a poll out at the weekend said that Labour and the Lib Dems are saying that voters back their Brexit delay and they're blocking a general election. But the poll indicates no. The 11% more approve of the sackings of the people in the Tory party. 17% more than don't do want an early election. I mean, these aren't, I've given both the figures. I've just said what percentage more one than the other, and just forgotten about the don't knows. 20% more than don't prefer Boris to Corbyn. 21% more than don't prefer a no deal to Corbyn. And so 62% are more than not are disgusted with the UK political class. I suppose that's, in a way, Martin, is the key one. I mean, you can poo-poo this as a Daily Mail poll, of course, but that's a bit difficult to deny that the 62% more people are disgusted with the UK political class than are not.
But that's a pretty kind of wide target, the UK political class. It doesn't, you know, you've got to disaggregate all of this. All of the opposition parties, apart from the Democratic Unionist Party, Brexit haven't got a single MP at the minute.
Well, you've got a plus 2% majority for Leave over Remain. We've got a plus 17 majority want an early election.
Well, the point is that if those who are delaying the election have made their tactical calculations. It may be that they've calculated wrong. But the reason they've done it is to prevent a no-deal Brexit in an election campaign. And that's because there's a widespread understanding on all the opposition parties, the Liberal Democrats, Plaid Cymru, and of course Sinn Féin don't take their seats. If Sinn Féin took their seats, there would never have been a Tory government. Yeah? Seven MPs. That's the election. That's the election. Brexit, UKIP zero, Sinn Féin seven.
I always hear this narrative that there is no majority for no-deal Brexit, but what do you think the 62% want? They're disgusted with our current politicians. They want to get on with Brexit. And there's really, we really have to stop saying, well, we only want this type of Brexit or that type of Brexit. Why can't we just leave? And in my opinion, we're not going to have a deal, so let's just leave without a deal.
There is some logic to that, Martin, isn't there? Because you can negotiate a deal afterwards.
I think if we have a general election in which a no deal is honestly argued for by the parties that want a no deal,
can we just leave and then do a deal afterwards?
No, because you can't just leave when the parliament that's been elected now was elected in 2017 on the basis of the votes at the time. Now, of course,
on the basis of the Labour Party saying that they were going to honour the result.
Yes, but honour the result in terms of having a Norway style leave. When you talk about WTO rules, I have to tell you this. All the economic analysis I read suggests that a no deal Brexit is going to be either very bad, catastrophic, and of course you disagree, but I tell you, if there is a no-deal Brexit on the 31st, there could be a run on the pound.
But Martin,
people are going to find out that they're going to lose a lot of money for doing this.
Mark Carney, have you? Because last week he said, actually, it's not looking bad at all. In fact, the figures, we had an emergency crisis meeting in the Eurozone this week. I think it was on Thursday morning. And the Germany is going into recession as Britain is starting to an upturn right now.
We're not having an upturn in Britain.
Well, that's what they've said.
There's no investment going on in Britain at the moment.
It's
zero.
Relative. But I would rather we deal with this short-term disruption, have a good plan, and make sure we can mitigate the negative consequences and leave. That is much better than having 2 years more of uncertainty.
And what do you make, Martin, of Ollie Robbins going to Goldman Sachs? He was Theresa May's chief Brexit negotiator.
Are we surprised that these top-level people have a revolving door with the private sector? We know all about it. That's why there's been a rebellion at the grassroots of the Labour Party against that kind of politics.
But this particular individual has, you know, has delivered a deal which some would say is just exactly what the EU wanted. Therefore, well, he's been rewarded.
If you're going to negotiate with other countries, they've got their demands as well. Like the Irish have got a demand that they don't want a hard border. It's very simple. You don't have to have a hard border. You have the border in the Irish Sea, and then you could have a no-deal Brexit. But you can't do that because the Democratic Unionist Party are propping up the Tory government. In actual fact, they could They could actually go for it. This is one of the things that's been suggested this
Martin,
week.
Martin, let Desi speak, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Martin. I'm actually looking at the honours list, not just people who's in it, but it's the question of the honours list being used in this manner.
Guy Verhofstadt has also apparently offered Speaker Burko a job. He likes Speaker Burko for changing the standing orders of Parliament to get that through. Anyway, we're going to have a quick listen now to an advert we were playing on this show up until a few weeks ago.
If you're an EU citizen living in the UK, you will need to apply to the EU Settlement Scheme. The scheme is fully open and you have plenty of time to apply. It is free and all you need is your passport or ID card and to complete an online form.
All you need is your passport and ID card. Well, it turns out that is not true. That ad has been forced by the Advertising Standards Authority to be removed because what the government are doing, TT, is lying, actually. They're saying that's all you need. Actually, you need a lot more than that. And there's a whole massive bureaucracy that you need to fill out one of these forms. So why do you think the government are trying to con non-EU passport holders that they stand a good chance of staying here and the whole process is nice and easy?
I wouldn't say they're not transparent, but I have been through this process. I was a naturalized citizen, and what it says, these are the requirements and everything, it's not actually what you need to produce. So it's a whole lot more. And
well,
they need to have a better communication.
It's going to be different from EU to someone from the Philippines. It's going to be different.
Exactly. But it's the same process that they're not really good at communicating what you need. For example, you might need supporting documents. So it's not, when they say it's just your passport, they might say, well, your passport says you were not born here. So can you provide your old passport where you were born? So there's so many things. It's not that simple. And the point is the government needs to be able to communicate in details what is actually required, because I sympathize with people who have to go through Home Office and going backwards and forwards in terms of the requirements.
Do you sympathise with the record number of migrants have been trying to cross the channel into the UK in a single day this week? 86 people into sympathy on Tuesday amid concerns about the Calais camp closure. That's this week's news, is that more people than ever are trying to get into Britain.
Yes, I've heard that in the news, and what's happening here is that the Royal Navy seems to be doing a taxi service. I mean, what happens to the fact that we have an agreement that migrants should be processed in the first country they've arrived, and it's not us having control, and we need to really get a grip of it, of controlling the entry of the migrants. It's either we bring them in and we process them as appropriate as we can, or we insist that they should be processed in the first country.
But you yourself are a migrant. Don't you sympathise with these people?
I do. I do sympathise, but that they need to be processed properly.
Okay, time to sign off now for the Murdoch News at 7 o'clock. Thanks to our guest, Brexit Party prospective parliamentary candidate for Stroud, Desi
Bristol
Latimer. Join us after the US Own Comcast News at 7.
Online and on your mobile. BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour. Live from the Sky News Centre.